Luke 5, 11 to verses 1 to 11. Linwin, anyone there this morning at Linwin? Was she great? Wasn't she good? Just she speaks so honestly and vulnerably as well as powerfully and confidently, and she just makes you think that gives you courage to review your life and then to think, I want to do something differently in my life again today. Really good. I really enjoyed what she shared this morning. I wondered about myself as I was looking at it, as she was looking at it. I was mulling on it a little bit after she spoke. You know, when someone speaks better than you, you think, I might update what I was going to say. And so is this a story about Peter? Well, yes, it is a story about Peter, isn't it? And we can narrate, can look at the story through the eyes of Peter and how he deals with all the different situations that go on and his frustration. Joe, you do read well, and I love the tone of voice you gave Peter tonight. Oh, but Lord, if you say so, you know, I love that, you know. And it's a story about Peter and his shift from the beginning to the end of the story. But is it a story about Jesus? Well, it is a story about Jesus, isn't it? And you can look at what Jesus is doing. Peter, you can do it like character, kind of a critique of his personality. You can see, I love Peter as a person to follow because you get the richness of him as he moves through. And so you can trace that. But you could also see this in Jesus. It's interesting, isn't it, Jesus, what Jesus is doing in this story. He's being very deliberate and intentional about who he's meeting and who he's with and how he teaches. And he's clearly looking for disciples in a particular kind of way. And He's very deliberate with Peter, and he chooses his boat, not anyone else's. He chooses his boat to go out and teach from. And or maybe it's a story about disciple making. It's a story about Jesus, but maybe this is a little bit of Luke narrating the story again because he wants us to make disciples. You know, Luke would have wanted, that's what Luke is often, I think, trying to get us to do, is to help us in our journey of disciple making and bringing people to points of conversion and reconversion. And so Luke is the one who talks about conversion more than anyone else. He's Luke and Acts, the two together, he wrote them both. So he's always talking about people coming to Christ and their lives being totally transformed. So maybe this is a story of almost like a parable of transformation. Yeah, and he wants us to read into Peter about how we could be part of the disciple making process. Maybe that's what the story is about, or maybe the story is about us. Maybe the story is about you. Maybe this is about Jesus speaking to you and him giving you a particular meaning, a particular calling that shaped around you. And just like he did for Simon, he's got one for you, and it's going to be slightly different from Simon's, but it's going to be specific. I want you to be a fisher of men, has a Simon feel to it, but maybe yours isn't going to have fisher of men in. It's going to have a different flavor, but it's going to be a story for you. But you're waiting to see what Jesus will do to you and say to you to take you out into the next bit. I don't know, which is it? That's where my mind went. Which of these, and you can see how, I'm giving you a window into my chaotic mind here. That when I get a passage, there are many ways into the story, isn't it? And each one has a benefit, doesn't it? And they slightly, you know, you can get riches from each of those ways of thinking about the story. And which is the true one? Well, they're all true, aren't they? They're all what the passage is about. But which is the most important? I don't know which is the most important. I'm still wondering it. I'm making it up as I go along. Still wondering which of these is the most important for us tonight. I want to go on the journey. I think I got from it that Jesus wants us. So at the beginning of the story, I really enjoyed the fact that Jesus went to Peter before Peter came to him. And so that's good, isn't it, for us? And he noticed Peter. I don't know what there was remarkable about Peter to notice. I mean, you don't get the sense, the story isn't told in such a way as you know what the preamble to how many conversations and coffees they'd had beforehand with each other. But you get a sense of a fresh beginning. But Jesus has gone to Peter. Peter, can I borrow your boat for a bit? And what's interesting to me is that there's a bit of trust involved in that Peter isn't going to trust Jesus with everything right now, and Jesus isn't asking him for everything right now. But Jesus starts where Peter is. He's got a boat. Can I just borrow your boat for a bit? And that's a good trust bit. And I like the fact that Jesus needs Peter. That's good as well, isn't it? Like he might need you. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? Okay, Jesus will do without you as well, but he could do with you. He comes to Peter and he says, Peter, can I borrow your boat? Because it would really help me. And maybe he comes to you and he says to you, I want to come to you because you could really help me out. And wouldn't it be nice to be on the other end of that story? And Jesus wants me. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Well, maybe that's what's happening tonight. He's saying, hey, I actually really, not just like you or love you, because like God loves everyone, doesn't he? But he actually wants us. He wants you. That's a good thought. It made me think, well, I really enjoyed that thought as it applied to my life, that God would look at me and go, I want you, Richard. Not just because I need you to love me and, you know, you're a bad person and I want to make you a good person or whatever. But actually, you've got something I could do with, and I think there's something in you that I believe in, and I want your gifts and abilities, not because I just want to overwhelm you, but rather I feel like there's something in you I think you've got to offer the world. And so Peter gives Jesus the boat, and Jesus pushes out, and then he teaches everyone. Isn't that lovely? Teaches from the boat. Natural auditorium, I'm told. I've never done it myself, so I have no idea, but apparently that's how to communicate to a group of people over the sea, over the water. It just communicates a bit better. And the second thought was that Jesus then stretches us. So after the teaching, and Peter's with him, maybe in the boat sitting next to him, because Peter wouldn't have trusted Jesus with the boat. Little did he know that Jesus was fine with boats and seas and all that sort of stuff, and fishing, darn it. But at this point, he doesn't trust Jesus, so he's with him in the boat, and he's watching Jesus close at hand. And then Jesus has finished his teaching. We don't know how long he spoke for, and then he says, Peter, let's go out a bit further. And I love this idea of going to the deep. Did you notice that phrase? It takes him to the deep. I want you to push it out into the deep. And that made me think about what the next step for us. So it's one thing to be, the first stage of our discipleship maybe is that Jesus wants us and we recognize, oh, that's good, Jesus wants to be with me. The second stage is that Jesus wants to be with us but take us somewhere else. How's that feeling? He wants to take us to a deeper place and to stretch us into a new place, a new way of doing things. And I also thought that because this is a story about making disciples, I wondered whether Peter is going to repeat this story again and again, which is maybe why Luke tells it. But that Peter keeps getting taken beyond his comfort zone and having to go to the deep places of other people's lives. Now, I don't know about you, but the deep places are also the dark places, aren't they? The deeper it gets, the darker it gets. And the deep places are complicated conversations to have, aren't they? But they're the place where people really want God, aren't they? The deep places. And I wonder if this is a note to us to go to the... Jesus might be taking us to other people's deep places, or maybe your deep place. Some of you are thinking, I haven't got any deep places. I'm just a bit shallow myself. But I you do, and other people definitely do. And so he goes to the deep places, and maybe that's what's happening for us tonight. He's going to stretch you this week, take you to someone's deep place, and you're going to think, flippin' heck. You won't say flippin' heck because you don't speak like that, but I would say flippin' heck. It's good. Jesus is stretching us. And the third thought was that Jesus impresses us. And here, Peter, in the story is written often as if Peter is the expert, isn't he? He's the fisherman. And it's always in contrast to Peter's expertise that Jesus is brought up. And it's always irritating and surprising to Peter that Jesus knows quite so much about these things. And again, this gets repeated later on at the beach, doesn't it? When that early morning thing, when Peter gets the same experience of being told to throw his net over the side again. And that's when he remembers it's Jesus, because he remembers this story, doesn't he? It's an emotional story for him. But he gets told by Jesus to do something that he's not equipped to do or doesn't think is a very good idea. But Jesus is much better at it than Peter is. So maybe that's something for you and for me tonight, to know that if Jesus is giving you something to do, that Jesus is much better at this than you are. And that he could impress you. He could do something bigger than you could imagine, and it might be impressive to you. Two boats full of fish is a lot of fish. And Jesus maybe wants to do more impressive thing through your life than you could imagine. I just tell the person next to you that Jesus wants to fill two boats of fish, or say something like, he wants to do something incredible, more than you could ask for or imagine, or, you know, you're amazing and Jesus believes in you so much, he's going to do incredible things through your life. Just tell the person something next to you that Jesus believes in them and that he's got a plan for them and he's going to take them into Yeah, so we hear these things, and they're hard to say, aren't they? And hard to hear, and we don't really believe it. And it's difficult to think that we could be really used by Jesus. Everyone else is really used by Jesus, and then there's us. Have you had that experience where you feel that? You always look, it's other people who gets used by Jesus, and then there's us, or there's me. And we're the one that misses out on the activity of the kingdom. Look in on it. And I'm sure Peter felt like this too. But what's interesting is it's not our kingdom, it's Jesus' kingdom. And Jesus, the whole point of it is Jesus wants to take you to a place where you can't do it on your own, and then he gets to show off, not you. This is not about me doing well or you doing well, it's about him doing well and being impressive to other people. And impress us as well, that would be good too. Because we need to be impressed if we're going to share Jesus with other people, don't we? So at this point, Peter doesn't, you see, he's come on a journey, hasn't he, from trusting Jesus with his boat to being a bit irritated, having to put out into the deep, to being really impressed with him. That's quite a journey, isn't it? And until we're really impressed with him, we're not going to do very much about telling other people about him, are we? So maybe we need to be impressed by Jesus a bit and be taken to the edge of ourselves, where we have to trust him that he's going to do something to us. And then we notice that the response of Peter to this is that he falls down on his knees. Do you notice that bit when he falls down and he says, in the comparison between Jesus and himself, Peter feels lousy. And this is part of Peter's early discipleship. He needs to know this, and we need to know this too. Sometimes we do it the wrong way around. We never impress people with Jesus. We just tell them that they're lousy. You know, you're a sinner and you need to repent. Well, that's true. But the first thing that Jesus does is he doesn't start with the sin, he starts with the impression. He makes an impression about the kingdom of God, and it's a good thing. But in comparison to the good thing, what do we feel? Lousy, unworthy. We're not worthy of it. It's a gift, isn't it? It's not like we earned it. Peter didn't earn it. It wasn't his idea. He feels irritated and a little bit disappointed, a bit arrogant and proud, and he feels like he's a sinner. He doesn't really feel like worthy of having this guy in the boat. And that's a good place for a disciple to be, isn't it, for a while? Not forever, because this is a transitory moment. But Peter does need to go through this thing where he recognizes that he isn't all he could be. As I said this morning, he's not his best self, and that's not a bad place to be. Sometimes we really need to know that we're not, as we grow, we need to know that we're not the best person we could be. And that's a moment of growth, isn't it, when we admit to ourselves, we have the courage to admit to ourselves, I'm not who I should be. That then you can begin to turn the page and do a new thing. So this is a really significant moment for Peter. And maybe that's happening for you at the moment. You recognize Jesus for who he is and you're feeling like, oh, I'm not where I should be. Don't despise that. That's a good thing. And that's God working in you to begin again a renewal in you And this happens many times in our lives, doesn't it? We don't get I don't think we get converted once. Does anyone think we get converted once? I think we get converted many times as we go around this cycle again and again, realize, oh, I'm still learning. It feels like that for me anyway. And then the last one is that Jesus uses us. And I think this story of Peter with him at the end of the thing, when Jesus looks him in the eye and he says, I'm gonna make you as successful at fishing as you are, with fishing for men as you are at fishing. And he goes, but I'm not successful at fishing. You're much better at me than at fishing. I didn't catch any fish, and then you filled two boats just like that. And Jesus goes, exactly. I'm going to make you fish for men. The thing isn't Peter's going to make him a fisher of men, or that Peter chooses this vocation, I'm going to be a fisher of men. Or that he decides that he's going to work out a program of success for how to fish for men. No, Jesus is saying, I will make you a fisher of men. Did you notice that? The emphasis is on Jesus, not on Peter. In a way, Peter is rubbish at it for most of his life, isn't he? Until the Spirit comes on him. Able to do stuff that he could never do. And that's good for us, isn't it? Because we need to know that without him, we're not going to be much use to him. So maybe it's better that we stop trying and maybe pray and open ourselves up to more of the Holy Spirit and saying, God, come on me, because I can't do this until you help me for this stuff. But isn't it joyful as well that Peter is used? I want to be used. A good tea bag and a bad tea bag. A good tea bag is one that's already used, isn't it? Because you've had the tea. A bad tea bag is just still in its box. It's not a bad tea bag. It's a good tea bag, but it's hidden away. It's just a tea bag, isn't it? But a tea bag that's already used, what's that like? Well, it's given someone a really good cup of tea, hasn't it? Is this a good illustration? You're looking at me as if to go, what on earth are you talking about? I have thought about this before. I'm not making it up completely. I once shared this, and I stapled tea bags to people's cards, notebook. I said, you should be a good tea bag. And I realized I'd stapled all the tea bags. And of course, that was no good. Because the tea bags broke, and that wasn't good. But we want to be a good tea bag is a used tea bag. I want to be a used tea bag. You understand what I'm saying? I want to be used by him, and so did Peter. He had this delight in him. And doesn't every child have that? And don't we? Here I am, Lord. And Jesus comes, I want to use you. A couple of last thoughts. The fish are in the deep. So I think we think we will fish from the shallows, but we won't. We're going to have to go to the deep places. So I'm looking for courageous people who are willing to go into the deep, risky people who are willing to go into the deep. We create safe spaces to fish from, don't we? Let's invite people to toddler groups where we never talk about Jesus. I don't know what you do as a toddler group. Can't remember now. But that's not the deep, is it? We've got to go into people's deep places. And where are the dark, deep places? That's where we've got to go. Fisher in the deep. If we are obedient, the success or failure belongs to Jesus, not us. So our task is not to be successful or not. That our thing isn't to work something into being, but our task is to be obedient. Would you agree? Peter, the good story about Peter in this story is that he was obedient, and Jesus did the rest. You notice that Jesus did the rest, and he's going to do the rest. All Peter has to do is to keep in tune with the Spirit, walk in the Spirit. There's we're part of the Anglican Church. Did you notice that? And the Anglican Consultative Council met last week or the week before in Hong Kong, and bishops and lay people from across the world, nationalities all the way across all the different communion, part of the Anglican Communion, came together to talk together about the future. And what's interesting to me is that the Anglican Consultative Communion have come out with this idea that intentional discipleship and disciple making is the core of our business for the next few years. And we're just catching the wave at the same time that the world is catching the wave. And this was all they talked about for a week. And they produced this thing, and they've got a new logo. Everyone likes a new logo. Jesus-shaped life. Anglican discipleship. Have you seen those two words before? Anglican and discipleship next to each other. Published by Anglicans. It's good, isn't it? It's encouraging. And it's the wind of the Spirit moving across the world. We're all catching the same thing. He wants us to be intentional discipleships, intentional disciples. And he wants us to do all of the things that a disciple would, which would be to proclaim or to teach or to serve or transform or to safeguard. This is what we're about. And we're to have Jesus-shaped hearts, to let Jesus shape our hearts, which is the idea of the logo. It's good. I'm just sharing this just to show that we're part of a bigger thing. And the Archbishop, I don't even sure how you say Moon Hing. Anyone? Yeah, that'll do. Of Southeast Asia. He said this at the beginning. He said, to follow Jesus of Nazareth into his cosmic reign is simply the most challenging, the most beautiful, the most costly, the most rewarding journey we could ever choose to begin. Our following Jesus requires much more than the latest course or introduction to Christian living. Courses have their place, but our apostleship, our discipleship demands much more. In fact, it demands everything. And it just reminded me of the end of this story, where we end up at the end of this story. And a bit later on it says, churches should be assemblies of disciples. This is an Anglican document. With the Archbishop of Canterbury and others of senior rank in there, saying this is what we are. This is amazing. This is a shift of culture going on amongst us. Anglican churches should be assemblies of disciples of Christ and not pew-warming believers. All sermons should be discipleship-driven. All sermons should be discipleship-driven. This is an incredible document, I think. And not entertain spectators with feel-good sensation. Well, I've succeeded there. I can tell from your body language. Christ's death is costly, and it would be considered worthy if he knew that his life was laid down for people who became his disciples. That's a really interesting line. It would be sad for him if he knew that it was for pew-warmer Christians. A disciple of Christ will ask, what and how shall I serve and live for Christ? A pew-warmer believer will ask, what will Christ do for me? It's challenging, isn't it? It's good. And the verse at the end of our reading was this. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats up on the shore, left everything, and followed him. Katie, you led a very interesting prayer when you said at the end, maybe now we'll pray and see if we can let some things go. I wonder if the next bit of worship, just as we finish off, that we could begin to let some things go, hear the voice of Jesus calling us to come into the boat with him, to use our lives, to push out into the deep, to take a risk with him. Father, as we spend some more time just worshiping with you and spending time with you, would you call each of us individually to the things that you want to call us to? Would you speak to us?